MasterCard sings us the holiday spending blues. From APM, this is the Marketplace Midday Update. I'm Jeff Horwich. It is December 26th. 'Twas the day after Christmas, and a big credit card company says we were not spending enough. Go figure. Plus, a plan to help more folks who are underwater on their mortgages, and a single-payer healthcare system is on the way to Indonesia.
Don't miss the numbers, the news, and Kai's final note. Subscribe to the Marketplace podcast. Find it on iTunes or online at marketplace.org/podcasts.
Analysts from MasterCard today give us our first post-Christmas read on holiday spending, and their take is kind of grim. Their numbers show spending on gift-type items in the 2 months before Christmas was up less than 1% from last year. Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein has been spending the morning with these holiday retail figures. Hey, Dan.
Hey, good morning, Jeff.
What does MasterCard say was behind the poor showing for consumers?
Right. Well, the report's looking at the holiday goods, things like furniture, clothing, and electronics. And the analysts blame this poor showing on the threat of the fiscal cliff in Washington, the shootings in Newtown, the presidential election, even the weather.
Yeah, remind us, what was up with the weather in this period?
Sure. Well, sales dropped in both the Mid-Atlantic and the Greater Northeast, ground zero for Superstorm Sandy last month. According to MasterCard, those two regions make up nearly a quarter of all retail sales in the country. But Julie Neiman, an analyst with Smith Moore & Company, thinks what's really going on is that people are just digging out of the recession.
Consumers are staying in their budgets. They still have high levels of operating consumer debt. Jobs are improving, but the pay is at lower levels, so consumers are being smart about this.
Dan, Christmas is over. Is there anything that retailers might do now to try and entice those smart consumers back?
Well, Paula Rosenblum of RSR Research thinks we're going to start seeing some serious discounts here.
Today is going to be a huge shopping day. I think the whole rest of this week is going to be a big shopping week. So you're going to see the sales sort of come along over this week and next week into January. And the implication is retailers will take gross margin hit. Their profits will be down.
You know, Jeff, Rosenblum thinks on top of the bad weather and everything else, by promoting gift cards and pushing the holiday season so far up into the calendar, retailers really just have themselves to blame for these poor sales.
Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein, thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Applications for U.S. home mortgages continued to rise last week, both for refis and for new home purchases, the latter of which hit a new high for the year. And this morning, the Wall Street Journal reports on efforts in the Obama administration to expand the safety net for more people who owe more than their homes are worth. Since 2009, underwater homeowners whose mortgages are owned or guaranteed by one of the government-backed mortgage giants, Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, well, those folks have been able to lower their monthly payments with what's called a HARP refinance. But that program has left a lot of folks out, which is what officials now seem keen to address. Chris Mayer is a professor of real estate at Columbia Business School. Good to talk with you.
Great to talk with you, Jeff.
What's been the track record so far of HARP, which is the existing program for underwater homeowners?
So there was just a recent study put out by an economist at Freddie Mac showing that people who had refinanced under HARP had seen a reduced default rate of more than 50%. So you would have to look at the HARP program and say, even though it hasn't been applied to as many people as it could have, it has been very, very successful at keeping people in their homes.
So if the kind of opportunity to refinance for underwater homeowners under HARP were expanded, what's the possible upside and what's the risk?
The upside for this is there are particular communities, places in Nevada, California, urban areas like Cleveland and Detroit, where we haven't seen the kind of recovery that we're seeing nationally. So this is really a way of bringing the recovery to parts of the country where it hasn't seen a recovery. The risk of this is that any such program that involves taking people who are deeply underwater on their mortgage has to make sure that taxpayers are protected.
We're talking about an awful lot of folks who might be able to take advantage of something like this, should they get their hopes up, though, given the politics and the details around all this.
This is actually a targeted program. My guess is you're talking about 700,000 or 800,000 mortgages that would be eligible for this, and these tend to be mortgages who are deeply underwater. You know, all of the conversations involve people who are current on their payments and who have been making payments at mortgage rates upwards of 8% for, you know, the better part of 5 years or more. So it is not a widespread program. The costs of this, if there were to be taxpayer costs, would not be large in the context of the budget crisis. But this is a way of helping some communities and some households who are not benefiting from the recovery that's taking place now.
Chris Mayer, professor of real estate at Columbia Business School. Thanks.
Sure. Great talking to you, Jeff.
And let's do the numbers. Well, maybe it's those retail figures, maybe it's the fiscal cliff, who knows? But so far this morning, markets are down considerably. The S&P 500 is off about 0.6%. The Dow is off about 0.4%, and the NASDAQ down the most of all, almost 0.75%. U.S. home prices continue to rise. So says the S&P Case-Shiller Index for October. The index shows the realty market strengthening, even as we headed into the typically slower time of the year. And it's kind of a slow day, data-wise. So here's one holiday-related number for you to consider now that we're past Christmas. 25,000. That's how many bugs Norwegian researchers say inhabit the typical living room Christmas tree. They include mites, moths, spiders, and something called bark lice. What's a little worse, the light and warmth of your holiday home coax many of them out of hibernation. It's not all so bad, though. Most of these guys are no harm to people, and unless you've got lots of other woody plants in your home, they don't last very long around the house. Even bark lice can't subsist on fruitcake.
Show Marketplace how much you like us. Stay connected to our hosts, reporters, and top stories on Facebook. Find us at facebook.com/APM Marketplace.
The U.S. healthcare industry is counting down the final days to a new tax. It's part of funding Obamacare. Makers of medical devices are warning that the provision is going to be a job killer. Here's our senior business correspondent, Bob Moon.
The 2.3% tax kicks in with the new year on devices ranging from pacemakers to CAT scan machines. Manufacturers have been lobbying intensely to block the tax, and several companies have already announced a few layoffs. J.C. Scott is head of government affairs for the Advanced Medical Technology Association.
In order to find savings, we're either going to see layoffs, we're going to see reductions in research and development, or potentially you're going to see higher prices for health care.
Most consumer items, eyeglasses, for example, are exempt from the federal tax. President Obama contends that device makers will see increased business as more Americans become insured. He made that case to Minneapolis TV station WCCO.
The health care bill is going to provide those medical device companies 30 million new customers. It's going to be great for business.
But Scott points out the promise of increased business is a long way off.
This tax triggers January 1st in a matter of days. The insurance expansion really won't get to its peak until, say, 2017.
The trade group still hopes Congress will delay the tax as part of its fiscal cliff bargaining. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Healthcare is no less a hot-button issue in Indonesia, one of the poorest and most populated countries on Earth. The government there is rolling out the world's biggest state-sponsored healthcare system in a little more than a year. It's an ambitious plan to make the Southeast Asian nation healthier and more productive. Taxpayers, companies, and individuals will foot the bill. Needy Dutt reports now from Jakarta.
Outside a sprawling orange-domed mosque in downtown Jakarta, 43-year-old Nana sells traditional Indonesian noodles from a rickety cart. He makes around $80 a month, not a lot to feed his family of eight. He has no health insurance and can't afford the $6 it costs to see a doctor.
If the illness isn't serious, we go to the doctor and pay for it ourselves. But if the illness is serious and we need to go to the hospital and can't afford it, we can get a certificate of poverty from the village headman and the government will pay.
Around 60% of Indonesians are already covered by some form of insurance. From 2014, that net will widen to include 100% of the population. The scheme will cost billions of dollars to operate, but in Indonesia, it's less about money and more about politics. Ali Gufran is the vice minister for health.
To reach consensus, it is not easy because the opposition and some other stakeholders are afraid they have to pay. But fortunately, we reached the consensus. Therefore, it is politically and technically the right time.
But obstacles remain, says Fauzi Ihsan, senior economist at Standard Chartered.
The issue is always execution, the inability of the public sector, whether the central government or regional governments, to implement their programs in time.
Another big hitch, the government still needs to train thousands of new doctors and nurses if it's going to take care of as many Indonesians as it says. And with national elections also scheduled for 2014, the pressure will be on to deliver on this landmark reform. In Jakarta, Indonesia, I'm Nidhi Dutt for Marketplace.
Winding down here, we got news today that Starbucks is using one of its most abundant resources to push for a fiscal cliff deal, disposable cups. CEO Howard Schultz has told all D.C. area baristas to write the words "come together" on every outgoing cup of coffee for the rest of the week. Just warms your heart. Kind of like a cup of coffee. And if that didn't warm your heart enough, here's one more story, a brief one, of a man whose Christmas wish may be coming true. This fall, a Norwegian guy named Havard Rugland posted a YouTube video set to music of himself kicking a football, kicking it over a patch of trees, kicking it directly to a person in a moving boat, kicking dead center field goals from 60 yards out. NFL scouts noticed. Now the Norwegian broadcaster NRK reports Rugland was brought to the States for a tryout with the New York Jets. One kicking coach says with a little finesse, he could be one of the greatest kickers of all time. That's all for the Marketplace Midday Update. I'm Jeff Horwich, and this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.